Oftentimes, when a freshman steps on campus for the first time during Welcome Week, that person may have only visited Campbell University once or twice before unloading the family car and moving into a dorm. When Taylor Reed stepped on campus as a freshman in August of 2007, to say that he was more than familiar with his surroundings would be a vast understatement. Not only was Taylor a highly valued defensive lineman who was preparing to compete for playing time on Campbell's first Division I football team, but he brought a family tie to the university that dated more than a century. Taylor Reed's great-great-grandfather is James Archibald Campbell, who opened Buies Creek Academy on January 5, 1887. His great-grandfather is Leslie Hartwell Campbell, who succeeded his father as president of Campbell College and oversaw the school's transition from junior college to a four-year institution in the early 1960s. His grandmother is Catherine Campbell King, longtime faculty member who spent decades welcoming newcomers to Buies Creek and making them feel at home. Taylor earned a place as a starting defensive end, earned PFL All-Academic Honors multiple times, and graduated with a degree from the Lundy Fetterman School of Business. Now married and a father of two daughters, Taylor and his wife Lindsay not only decided to move back to Buies Creek, but they chose to live in his grandparents' home on Leslie Campbell Avenue. My name is Stan Cole, class of 1987, and this is our next installment of Tales from the Creek, where we visit with the people who've made this place special over the years. I'm delighted to be joined today by former Campbell football standout Taylor Reed. Welcome to Tales from the Creek, Taylor, and thanks for taking the time to visit with us.
Thanks, Stan. I appreciate you having me.
Taylor, let's just start at the beginning. Tell us about growing up and how you got started in sports.
So I grew up mostly in Charlotte. From about the ages of, from when I was born, I was actually born in Pinehurst, and then we moved here at about the age of four. Mm-hmm. My dad's from Michigan originally, and he had a job offer. So our plan was to pack up and move to Michigan. Mm-hmm. So he moved out ahead. My mom stayed back, got the house ready and listed on the market. It went under contract. And then all of a sudden, his job was no longer there. So we were without a home. At that point, my dad had started his degree. He was going for engineering, and that was kind of his background. And then he wanted to go and complete that. So we ended up living in the house I'm currently in now, my grandparents' house, for about a year when I was 4 years old. So it was pretty cool. My dad was finishing up. He finished up his degree. My mom was in grad school to get her MBA. She was a trust major mm-hmm. at Campbell. And at the time she was working for, then it was Nations Bank, mm-hmm. now Bank of America. And then her department got transferred to Charlotte. So we packed up. It was a very fun year. I got to actually live on campus. One of my teammates, Trey Smith, we didn't know each other at the time. We found out that we both were living in the middle of campus right at that same time, which just kind of added to the story and one of the reasons why we've remained really close friends. But yeah, I grew up from then in Charlotte, and that's where I went through elementary school, middle school, and until the time I came back to college, that's where I grew up. In the university area, kind of northern Charlotte, mm-hmm. Huntersville, always played sports. Really, as I got older and started getting more competitive in one sport or another, they started falling off. I think baseball was the first one that I stopped, and then football came about 10 or 11 years old, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden that was occupying my fall, and I had to say goodbye to soccer. So football and basketball were really my the two sports that I focused the heaviest on, and they were really the two that I enjoy the most.
So let me ask you this. You are one of six brothers. Mm-hmm. Did that play any role in your competitive nature or anything like that? How was that? How did that play out?
Yeah, so it definitely did, but it was interesting because my four older brothers are from my dad's first marriage, so there's a bit of an age gap. Mm-hmm. there was never more than three of us in the home at one time.
Okay.
My older brother, Greg, was back. He was actually in school at UNC Charlotte. And so he lived with us for about a year or two. And so I always had older brothers mm-hmm. that would, you know, we'd play sports. They could dunk a basketball. They had, you know, their own pursuits and dreams and sports careers ahead of me. And so it definitely sparked a lot of that competitive drive. But it wasn't six of us in a household. I can't right. even imagine what that would be like. But it definitely had an impact.
So they were kind of more, you know, somebody that you aspired to be like, or you wanted to keep up with them a little bit, or
yeah.
is it kind of the feel there?
They had been there, done that. You know, they were older. And so, you know, wanting to go and succeed in sports, especially with football, because I was the biggest of my brothers. So it's funny. My oldest brother, Bobby, is the shortest in our family. And then we kind of go like a stair step. So I was the tallest, and now my younger brother, Robbie, he's 6'5". So luckily we stopped there.
Holy cow. Now, I understand you spent just about every summer, you know, for a while, you know, a week or so in Buies Creek with your grandparents. Tell us a little bit about, you know, about that and what you looked forward to every year when you came to Buies Creek.
Yeah, I loved it. I would always spend at least a week here in the summer. So I would go. My cousins lived locally. My Aunt Orr Green was just right over by the fire department. So mm-hmm. we would get our bikes and we would disappear for the day, going around campus, going to the arcade, to the Oasis. You know, we felt like, you know, the whole campus was ours. And as you know, in the summer, everything sort of clears out. So we had most of the campus to ourselves, and we just absolutely loved it. My grandfather he worked in the admissions office for 20 plus years and then was in kind of career placement and development, career guidance. And he worked with Miss Peggy Lawrence for years. And so I would come with him into work, and I would go and sit in his office and get to politic around campus and, you know, meet different people and professors. And then my grandmother was always bouncing around from one thing to the next, whether it was at church or at the Campbell House, or, you know, welcoming someone new to the community. So I got to kind of go and ride around with both of them and kind of see all over Buies Creek. And it was just a lot of fun.
You know, the folks who have been around or, you know, Buies Creek and know, you know, Catherine King is just synonymous with this place. My wife says that the reason we're in the house that we are now is because of an architectural design and drafting course she took under your grandmother when your grandmother was teaching here. And, you know, and my wife Claudia designed our home, but she learned those skills, you know, from your grandmother. And, you know, and then so many years of knowing her, I mean, you know, we called her the welcome wagon lady of Buies Creek because no matter who moved in, if it was a new coach, a new family, she was always reaching out, taking them something and trying to make them feel at home. Is that something that, you know, was that passed down to her, and has she since passed that on in your observation?
Yeah, she's always been a pillar of the community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, really that was something that was passed on. She used to tell stories growing up. They always had teachers that were living at their house. Mm-hmm. You know, many of them, you know, lived further away, so they needed a place to stay that was close to campus. Teachers weren't making a lot. So, you know, for some of the single professors too, they would have a couple rooms that the teachers would live in, and they would share meals. They routinely had people over for dinner. That was something that my grandmother carried on too. So in the summer, I remember thinking, you know, there would be three course meals prepared on a Tuesday. And, you know, with the new couple that moved into town, you know, that was attending the church. And then, you know, another one might be, you know, a family friend or a professor, you know, on Thursday. I just remember thinking, does everyone here do dinner parties multiple nights a week? But That was always something for her, that she was always involved in the community, whether it be through the school, through the church. Her and my grandfather were charter members, helped found Memorial Baptist Church. And so she was always, you know, again, like you said, almost the welcoming committee to Buies Creek. And so that was something that she always, for us, you know, would bring us along. It was just a lot of fun getting to meet a lot of people.
Probably about two decades ago, my now 29-year-old daughter, Catherine, would have been 30 feet up in the air in the big magnolia tree at your place. You know, in the 4-H club is what they called it, but Catherine said it just felt like an after-school play date, and there'd be lemonade, and they'd make cookies, and then they'd play in the yard and sit around and visit, and a bunch of the little kids, and most of them associated with Campbell or the church in some way, shape, or form. But they just have such memories of that as kind of being a gathering spot right there on the corner in the afternoon. And it was just, you know, she's just a gem of a person, and we're all better for knowing her. I'm curious, Taylor, did she share stories of her grandfather and her father that she passed down to y'all, or is there anything that sticks out in your mind about them?
One of the things that she would always say is she was very, very frugal, and any time that I would tell her that I got a discount on something or a good deal on a jacket, she would say, "That's your Scotch blood."
Mm-hmm.
And that was always something, you know, for her growing up, you know, they were kind of at the center of the community, but the community also was built as a part of them. And they didn't believe in, you know, having a lot of things for show. That was very important, the image that they gave, that they were community members. I remember one thing that she would always say, she said, Daddy would always talk about, he would come home and the board of directors wanted to increase his salary, and he wouldn't do it repeatedly unless every other staff member had a proportional increase.
Wow.
And so I thought that was something that was really cool. That was something that obviously resonated with her, but it just kind of showed, you know, where they came from and sort of the spirit which Campbell was built.
Taylor, switching gears a little bit here, but you know, you grow up on campus, you're in high school, you're playing football. When did you have an inkling that you might want to play football in college?
So I would say probably my junior year, I loved playing football. I played it since, again, probably 10 or 11 years old, mm-hmm. and played it every single year. I got to where I thought that I wanted to go to a very big school. Mm-hmm. I was looking at South Carolina, NC State, Auburn, believe it or not. And I wanted to go somewhere where if I moved across the country, I could watch my school play football on Saturdays. And it's funny how things change, because my senior year, I had a great season, and I had finally come into my own. I was playing my best ball. I'd gotten offered to participate in some of the local showcase, the Shrine Bowl tryouts, different camps and things where I was starting to get more attention. And by the time the season was over, I realized that I wasn't ready to say no to football. The problem is I wasn't really doing much in terms of trying to build myself as a recruit, because it just wasn't a priority to me. And so I was a little bit late to the game. I did do some one-day camps. I did look around, but most of the schools that were looking at me were, you know, smaller schools. Mars Hill, small interest from James Madison, Ball State, but they were just schools that didn't really have much to offer. It wasn't anything where I really wanted to go and choose that as my college path. And then, lo and behold, Campbell announces that they're going to be starting a new football program, bringing football back, and it was going to be 1AA. And for me, it was not an automatic yes, but as I started sitting there and thinking about it and really thinking about what I wanted to do, it just seemed like it was the perfect opportunity for me. And I remember sitting there my senior year, I had a couple applications I had to finish up with NC State and Duke, and that was how I was going to spend my afternoon. And I decided that I'd much rather celebrate and not do any of that. And so I called Coach Steele in line, leaving school, told him that I was going to be coming to Campbell, that I'd be signing. And then the next call was to my parents. So it's kind of funny. It wasn't something I actually thought that I wouldn't be going to Campbell. I always loved Campbell. It always meant a lot to me, but I didn't see myself at Campbell as a student. And then slowly but surely, one thing led to another, and the stars aligned.
Taylor, I can only imagine, but what was your mom's, your grandparents, what was the family reaction to you deciding to come here?
They were tickled. That's what they wanted the whole time, but they didn't want to put pressure on me. Mm-hmm. And they were very good about it, because had they done that, I might not have made the same decision. But they were thrilled. I mean, my grandmother was so excited. We got to spend a lot of time together. And my parents were too, because it was a place they knew. They got to be part of my college experience. Not a lot of parents can say that. Mm-hmm. And it was just really fun.
You mentioned, you know, larger schools and everything, but then the opportunity to play football came here. Did you know that you wanted to pursue a degree in business wherever you went? So that was already, that was what you were looking at?
Yeah. So in high school, I was part of an organization called DECA. It's mm-hmm. a marketing organization, and it was huge at my school. I think we had the largest chapter in the country. And for me, what was unique about DECA was that it taught me that there were different skills above and beyond being good at standardized tests. And I was good at taking tests. But where I thought that I really exceeded and where it challenged me was being able to dress the part, making eye contact, you know, being able to give a presentation, being able to think on the fly. And I did really well. My wife now, Lindsay, we were dating in high school. We started dating our freshman year in high school, and we actually competed in an event through DECA together. It was an entrepreneurship written event, and we ended up winning first place. We got to go and compete internationally, and we went to Orlando. And for me, it was just a huge confidence boost. And it was something I knew that I didn't know specifically what area I wanted to pursue in business, but I knew that I wanted to do something business related.
Obviously, the business school is one of the standard programs at Campbell, and it's got such a great reputation. How did you decide on your international business major? And tell us a little bit about your undergraduate program and how that helped you prepare you for your career.
Yeah, so I graduated in 2007. 2007-2008 was right when we hit the financial crisis. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my family had told me that this is actually a great time to be going into college, because by the time you come out, the job market will have settled a little bit, and you will have, you know, the most current skill set to be able to be in high demand. And so at the time, I didn't have a specific path. For whatever reason, trust and wealth management, my mom had majored in that. I don't know why specifically I didn't go that route, but I wanted more of a general business degree. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, I thought, well, there'll be a million applicants that when I'm applying for a job will have just a bachelor of business. So I wanted something that to me was more internationally, globally focused. And then I had always done a foreign language through high school, So being able to do international business, it basically ate up all my electives with a foreign language. Mm-hmm. So it challenged me in that aspect to where I might have a chance to study abroad or be able to use that, you know, as I furthered my career.
And what language were you studying?
Spanish.
Spanish. Mm-hmm. I mean, and what a, you know, the way the times are and with, you know, being able to, you'd be conversational in Spanish, or did you ever reach that level, or how?
My joke is that I got a minor okay. in Spanish, and I speak a minor amount of Spanish. So, no, I can hold my own. I can read it well. I do use it quite a bit in my current career now. But you know, never got to the spot where I was fluent and conversational. But I can use it with phrases and things that, you know, help me go and get done what I need to.
It always blows my mind, particularly when I talk to some of our international student athletes, that English is their second language. And maybe, you know, if you talk to someone from Northern Europe or somebody like, they might have been studying English since they were 8 or 10 years old.
Absolutely.
But they say the difference is when they start thinking in English. Mm-hmm. And then they go home, say, to Sweden or something over Christmas, and they go back to, you know, and they just switch it back and forth off and on, sometimes in the middle of conversations. And mm-hmm. it just absolutely blows my mind. I have a hard enough time being conversant in English, not to mention adding in a couple of other things. That's remarkable.
They say when you can dream, when you dream in another language, that's when you've cracked it.
Well, I've never even heard that. Yeah. So I'm going to go home and try to think of something that I'm going to dream in, something that I don't understand. And maybe I'll expand my mind a little bit that way. Taylor, you graduate from high school in 2007. Hit the campus, and it was basically a redshirt year for you all. Mm-hmm. 1 year of practicing before starting full competition in 2008. What are some of the things you remember about that first year? It was, you know, there weren't a lot of luxuries associated with the football team at that time.
Yeah, it was challenging. The first year, there was so much excitement, but a lot of it was weeding players out. Mm-hmm. You know, we came in our class, we were basically all freshmen. Mm-hmm. We didn't have anything to play for. We were trying to go and figure it out. We were trying to figure out how to be good athletes, you know, how to be leaders. Nobody knew what college football was about, and we were a new program that was also trying to figure it out. It's funny, we had, instead of a locker room, you know, we had the campus laundry that was repurposed and converted into a locker room. While they were building the field over where it is now, you know, we practiced out in a field behind, you know, where the soccer field and the softball stadium is now, on a grass field that's not, you know, leveled or necessarily intended for football. And then we had cross country and track that were running around us at the same time. And the very beginning, we also were, you know, we were doing our strength and conditioning all out of Carter Gym. And so it's funny because, you know, we had better luxuries coming from high school, you know, as opposed to when we came to college. But quickly that changed, and it just made it all part of the journey. But that first year was definitely a challenge for us.
Fast forward to August 30th, 2008. Felt like one of the hottest days in Buies Creek possible. No lights at Barker Lane Stadium. And had to play in the heat of the day on that artificial surface. Aside from the heat, that's a given. There was enough people who were there and then left to go to the swimming pool or wherever they went. What do you remember about that day? Did it just feel great to play against a team in a different color of jersey?
Yeah, there had been so much buildup. That game I can't describe as anything more than just an adrenaline dump. We were so excited. We had waited so long. We all were tired of practicing and hitting the same people every single day. And we were just so excited. The community was excited. I still think that's probably one of the most attended games still. And, you know, we only had half of the stadium built. you know, the visitor side was the home side, and they brought in a bunch of pop-up bleachers on the other side. But I think we had between 6,000 and 7,000 people there for that day. And, you know, I definitely think that there were some lessons learned. I remember going out on I had to – before I got my first series in on defense, I had to – I was on the punt. I was on the punt team, and I was a personal protector. And as soon as I ran down to cover – my first punt, I'd been conditioned, gone through all, so I thought, I was exhausted. I mean, I had nothing left. That my very first snap on defense, I was thinking to myself, I've got to catch my breath. I mean, we were just, I can't describe how much buildup there was to that game, and just to be able to go and put on the real jersey, to be able to do it in front of an audience instead of, you know, up on a field. It was a great feeling and a special day. Wish we could have come out the victors that day.
What are some of the times that, you know, on the field that stand out, some highlights that you still think back to and think, man, that was cool to be a part of that?
So that first season was challenging because we had gone through and all the games that we had earmarked as the games that, yeah, we're going to win these for sure. And we didn't win. We lost to Birmingham Southern that first game. We lost a close one to Methodist that we gave away. And we get deep into the season, and we have one more out-of-conference game. We're playing a Division III school, Carthage, up in Wisconsin. And we're playing a good competitive game. And as we're getting down to the end of the fourth quarter, we have some things not go our way. And all of a sudden, they're about to drive and put it in the end zone and go up. And we're about to have another loss. And you felt it, you know, in that moment. And for whatever reason, they decided to throw a pass. Milton Brown intercepts it. In the end zone, takes it all the way back to the other end of the field, scores a touchdown, and we got our first win. And although we wanted to have it, we would have loved to have it in front of the home crowd. For us as a team, it was a better victory on the road because we were all together. You know, we had to take the whole trip back, and it was just, you know, that feeling that was so long overdue because you're so excited to play your first season. And, you know, for a lot of us, you know, we came from, I never had a losing season ever in football.
Wow.
I had a couple that were 500 and every other one was, you know, one or two losses or undefeated. So I was a spoiled athlete for most of my career. And then coming through and, you know, I think at that point that might've been our eighth game of the season to finally go and get a win and to get it in that way. It was just, It was a great feeling.
What do you learn from, you know, going through the tough knocks and not having more wins than losses, not being a playoff team? What do you learn from that?
Adversity. I mean, that's the beauty of sports. You know, nothing is given. Everything is earned. You know, you're part of a team. So an individual performance, you know, there are victories that are there, you know, but you also are moving as a total unit. It's helped me out in life more than anything else I've done, because everything that I do and all the challenges I go through, I relay them back to sports. I mean, even for me with football, I was always good, but every team that I was on, I started at the back and had to work my way up to the front. In high school, in Pop Warner, at Campbell. When I first came in, I got recruited as a defensive end. That was my more natural position. But we were so deep, and there was one freshman that was playing at tackle, at three technique. And so I looked at it, and I realized we were so thin there, and I could kind of play that hybrid, but again, the edge is where I felt the most comfortable. So I switched positions, and you know, for me, I kind of got stuck there because we never really had a lot of depth at that position. It took a while for us to be able to really have two strong units, you know, at three technique and at nose. And so eventually for me, the only reason I was able to work my way back out was through injury. We had so many injuries going in that first season that by the end of it, we were faced with the decision to take some of our younger players and either jeopardize their red shirt or we could switch from a 4-3 to a 3-4.
Right.
So when we switched to 3-4, I got to play out on the edge again, and that's where I really started to thrive. So I went back after that season. I went back to Charlotte. I got a personal trainer that I paid for with pretty much all the money I made, you know, working a summer camp as a counselor. And I dropped 25 pounds, maintained all my strength goals, and I came back in the best shape that I'd ever been in. And, you know, for me, it transformed me as a player. And, you know, there was 12 different phases of, you know, that same transformation and progression for me that, you know, that sports went and taught me. I mean, and so I think when I look back at Campbell in particular, I think about how much harder it was than I thought it was going to be. Very close, especially early on after that first year. I thought I wanted to transfer out and go to South Carolina. I was very, very close. And now, you know, I can't imagine what my life would be like if I never come to Campbell, because so much of Campbell is still a part of my life today.
Taylor, from an observation standpoint, and you can even go and look at the scores from year one to year two, and so much we could see hanging in there, being competitive the first half, year one, then it get away year two and three, because, you know, weren't as deep as the other teams. The line hadn't grown. It was a bunch of, you know, 18 and 19-year-old guys playing against a bunch of 22 and 23-year-old guys who've been in strength and nutrition programs for 4 and 5 years. And it was remarkable just to see from year one to year two the difference on both sides of the ball with the line. And you would have been, you know, you were right in the thick of that. Could you tell when you got back year two, year three, that it was a different game that y'all were playing for 60 minutes?
Absolutely. Yeah, our second season was when everything shifted. One of my closest friends, Daniel Polk, he came in from NC State. At the time, when he first came in, he had a broken hand and was playing linebacker on the practice squad. And we had gone through, several different quarterbacks, and we're just really trying to find that guy that was going to give us our identity. And he was also a year older than all of us. And so he came in from a bigger program where he saw, you know, the caliber, the standard that was there, and really took it as a challenge to go and put the team on his back. And I think that was one of the things for us. We felt like we had a guy, especially on defense where I played. You know, you work as a team, but you're playing in two different units. And so, you know, we felt like then that we had somebody that we could go and get behind. And like you said before, you know, we had a year in the weight room. We also had, between the year one and year two, we had a new strength and conditioning coach, Andrew Carter, who I'm still close with today, was one of the big pivotal changes in all of our speed, recovery, strength. A lot of the stuff had felt kind of parsed together in the beginning. Some of us were doing different workout programs than other people. You know, we weren't necessarily seeing all the same gains, but we didn't really have anything to compare it to. And when Andrew Carter came in, we knew what to expect. We had a program in place. We knew what to do during season. We focused on recovery. And so it allowed us just the maturity, but also having some senior guys, and then just the program itself through the strength and conditioning, I think was one of the biggest attributes from year one to year two.
Our guest on Tales from the Creek is Taylor Reed, class of 2011 and former Campbell football standout. Taylor, you and many of your teammates are still close. Why do you think that is?
I think in part, it's all of us coming in together at the same time. Mm-hmm. I mean, no program, you're not built to where you have 90% of your roster all in the same class. That's so young. For us, when you come, what that means when you show up on campus is that, you know, normally there's some older upperclassmen that live off campus. You're sort of staggered in as far as what classes you're taking, as far as spreading out where you're living. We didn't have any of that. We were all in the dorms. We were all in Murray and Saul and Burcott. And then we all moved over to Barker at the same time. We all moved off campus at the same time. And so I think that was part of it. I think we also saw, you know, the growth. I mean, we saw from the time we came here, we didn't have a stadium. We saw the field get built. We saw the visitor side go up. We saw the home side get built. You know, we saw the growth of the program. And so even though we didn't have the immediate success on the field that we wanted to in the first couple of years, you know, we could see the growth and we could see a higher caliber of athlete coming in. And so I think part of that, you know, it builds a sense of pride. I mean, it makes you want to pour in to, you know, the student athletes that are here now. I also think that, you know, doing a good job and getting a lot of local recruits, doing it, especially, I mentioned Daniel Polk, he's from Raleigh. I'm from Charlotte. You know, we had a lot of other guys that were Charlotte, Raleigh, within, you know, a 2-3 hour radius. So a lot of their families came in too. That was another piece of it, is that there was a big family connection between all of the teammates. After the games, we would come over to my grandmother's house, and there would be 3, 4, 5 sets of families that were there, and they'd come and greet us. We'd all have food. My Aunt Katie would take a million pictures. Everyone would ask us, you know, about my Aunt Frances. She didn't understand football at all. You know, she was basketball and tennis mm-hmm. and everything else. And so she would ask me questions that she would earmark from listening to the radio broadcast, because she would always have her Walkman in. And so it was special. A lot of our families became close and are still close. And so I think that definitely solidified the bond between us. And even now, I mean, if I look at all my friends and, you know, my immediate network of just who I consider in my personal sphere, all of them are either tied to Campbell, and a lot of their spouses are too. Mm-hmm. Daniel met Rebecca, you know, at Campbell. Stephen Goldsmith married Lauren Barefoot, who was a cheerleader. Mm-hmm. You know, Will and Julie, they were both coaching. You know, she was in athletic training. So, you know, and Brandon and Jesse, same thing. She was coaching lacrosse. Mm-hmm. And so when you have that, especially with the spouses as well, there's just so many ties to Campbell, and it's such a big part of all of our stories and how we all got to be where we're at.
Taylor, your coach, Dale Steele, was inducted into the Campbell Hall of Fame in 2025. Tell us a little bit about Coach Steele and what made him the right person to resurrect this program.
So one of the things with Coach Steele is he is the most meticulously organized person that I've probably ever met. I think he was the guy because he came from a football pedigree. Mm-hmm. You know, we were all in a way, you know, learning on the fly. He had never been at the helm in a head coaching role, but, you know, he had been a career coach. So is his brother, a football family. I think having that organization and attention to detail kept us moving on track. I mean, what you're asked to do as a head coach already, you have to wear so many different hats. But not only are you trying to engage with the community, you're trying to recruit. You're also, you don't have scholarships to give. You know, at the time we were non-scholarship, you know, when we first started in the league. And so then you have to get creative with finding financial aid. You're also going through construction. I mean, physical construction, you know, with a building, a new venue. And so I think that, you know, it took a special person to be able to help navigate through that. Again, keep things moving forward, find the right group of coaches to come in. We had some great coaches that Coach Steele hired. Coach Link, you know, I had the privilege of getting to travel with the team last year to Delaware, which is where Coach Link's at now. You know, we got to see each other there, and it was a really cool experience. You know, Coach Williams, Greg Williams, you know, was a highly decorated coach, was here. Coach Grantham, Coach Mariani, you know, still in Wilson. I mean, Coach O, you know, that now has his first head coaching gig in Michigan. So, you know, we had a lot of it wasn't just Coach Steele, but having the vision to put those, you know, coaches in place really made a big impact. The other thing I think that's important and was kind of integral in Coach Steele coming and starting the program here is that he lived in the community. And I think what you're seeing right now, you know, with, you know, Coach Harris, what Braxton's a member of the community. People see him out. His kids are in local schools. You know, people see them. They have real ties to the community. Coach Steele lives right now in Frat Row, you know, and Pam Steele, you know, worked in the business school. And I mentioned Peggy Lawrence, who worked with my grandfather for years and years. Miss Peggy and Miss Pam, you know, they worked together in the office. And so I would stop in all the time. Pam Steele is probably responsible for, I would say, maybe a third of all of us, you know, in terms of helping find jobs and careers and find that next step. Once we got done with school, but even when we were in school too, I mean, we had to find internships. And so, you know, I think that was one of the things that I can't really imagine if you're a coach that is, if you were living in Raleigh and commuting an hour here, you know, I don't know if that would have had the same impact, but I think there's a reason why you can see, you alluded to it earlier, you know, that boost in growth from one year to the next. And, you know, looking back now, you know, from the facilities that we have to where the program is, again, to the caliber of athlete and that we're getting, you know, I think that Coach Steele was the right man for the job to come and help us build the foundation for that program.
Taylor, you mentioned, you know, you and Lindsay dated in high school and everything. And then tell us a little bit how that relationship grew and what its life is like now with two young daughters.
Yeah, so it's funny. You know, a lot of our friends and stuff, I told you we started dating when we were freshmen in high school. When you're going through it, you know, you never fully know, you know, what's going to last, what's not. We certainly felt like we went through our ups and downs. Everyone else that was around us, you know, it was the least shocking thing ever to know that we were still going to date and be together in college and, you know, ultimately going and getting married. But, you know, one of the things when we first came to college, we weren't together. But, you know, we ended up, she would come to games. She would come for the scrimmages and spend the weekend. We did a lot of traveling, especially that first year. It's probably one of the other reasons why we all were so tight-knit. You know, nobody was going to rob us of a college experience, mm-hmm. But we were all living on campus. So a lot of times that meant, you know, leaving on the weekends, mm-hmm. which a lot of students do. But we would roll in packs. We would go, we would pick out a school and Campbell University would, you know, be at University of Wilmington, you know, for the weekend. And we'd all be staying in different spots with different friends. But it was fun. And she hosted a lot of us, you know, throughout the years. And it was a lot of fun going there. She was at UNCW for undergrad. And so it was a nice, easy hour and a half drive from Buies Creek.
Taylor, tell us a little bit. What prompted the move back to Buies Creek? I mean, did you, when you were here, did you ever picture yourself, you know, 10 or 15 years down the road, you'd be living in that house that you used to go and have post-game meals at?
No, I would have said just like before, you know, I never thought that I would be back living full-time in Buies Creek. Right after my wife and I got married, Lindsay and I got married, in August of 2015, I was working in medical sales at the time, and one of my clients in Florida, they were looking to expand their admin team. Lindsay had gone, and at the time, she just finished up her master's in health administration, and they asked if she'd want to interview. And, you know, at the time, we were kind of like, hey, let's just maybe take a breath. Mm-hmm. We just got married, and we're figuring it out. And you know, we went down for an interview, and first of the year, she'd accepted the job, and we were in a moving truck going down to Florida. And we were down in Florida. We were in Vero Beach for about 5 years. Loved it down there. That's where both of our daughters were born. But ultimately we decided that we wanted to come back, because the one thing that we couldn't bring, no matter what, was we couldn't bring all of our friends, family, and with us. And we really missed having that community aspect. My mother-in-law was diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer. She'd actually had her third round of it. They were living right outside of Orlando. And so it was really exciting for us, because we were getting to live close to her family. She got diagnosed the month that we moved down there. And we were down there in Florida for about 5 years. Her mom passed away about 2 weeks before our first daughter was born. And so for us, that was a big shock. My wife is extremely close to her mother, and her sister, and her family, and I am as well. I did a lot of traveling for work. I said I was doing sales, so even when I was down in Florida, I covered the Southeast, but really all 48 states were open to me. So as we started having kids, you know, that became something where travel was not something that I wanted to be gone for multiple weeks out of the year. I didn't want to leave them out on the island. And then about a year and a half after Lindsay's mom had passed away, her father had been diagnosed with brain cancer. And so for us, you know, it was just a big shock. And at that time, she was on maternity leave with our second. And, you know, we really sat down and thought hard about it. And we realized, look, it's either now or never, you know. And for us, we want to be back close to family. And so that's what we chose. Buies Creek, how it fit into that was, it's kind of funny. Before all that took place, I was already, during COVID, I wasn't able to travel as much for work. So I was looking at other things to pursue. One of my former teammates, Daniel Polk, had informed me that there was going to be a new mortgage branch that was going to be opening. And he said, I think you might want to talk to, you know, this guy, Pat, and just see if maybe it's for you. And, you know, one thing led to another, and I was already pursuing my mortgage license at the time. I thought that this would be something maybe a year down the road. And then we decided to move. I mean, it wasn't ideal at all, but I had flexibility of my job to be able to, you know, continue doing that until I could fully transition. And normally when you're relocating, you know, you don't have that luxury. So we decided to, we were going to put our faith in God. We were going to chase, you know, what was really the important thing to us. And at the time, we didn't know where we were going to live. We listed our house in Florida. It's kind of a weird time in the market. It was right before everything exploded. It was doing well. But, you know, there was three houses in our neighborhood that were up for sale. Our house was on the market for, you know, almost 50 days. And so we wanted a chance to, you know, get re-ingratiated to this area. And at the time, there was actually a family friend was living in our house now. And so we weren't sure if we were going to be living in Buies Creek for 6 days, 6 weeks, 6 months. And, you know, now it's been 4.5 years. You know, we did that for a little bit. Eventually, our friend moved out closer to Raleigh to be near his grandchildren. And it was a chaotic experience to start, and we slowly settled in. And it's just so funny now thinking 4.5 years later, you know, being in this house, you know, that I grew up coming to, that my great grandfather, you know, lived in, that, you know, I hear stories everywhere I go about people proposing, you know, in my home, or, you know, they're writing their wedding invitations, or, you know, one story or another, something very special and unique. And it's really cool. It's the one thing that we couldn't get anywhere else, that, you know, that community feeling that exists here in Buies Creek.
Tell us a little bit about what you're doing now, you know, professionally.
So, yeah, as I mentioned before, I do mortgages. I'm a loan officer. So I came in right in the middle of the refi boom and purchase boom. I've been doing it now since I've been back, so right around 4.5 years. And it's something that I love doing. You know, it's funny because I don't necessarily need a degree to do my job, but one of the things I think back to, part of my job now is tracking what's going on with the Federal Reserve, you know, the bond market, things that impact interest rates. And I go back to Dr. Masashari in my international business class when he would teach us about Ben Bernanke and quantitative easing and money supply. And it's funny because those are the things that I lean on. And you know, you never know what tools you're going to take with you. And I use it every day now.
So five brothers, now you're the only man in the family.
Yeah.
What's that swap been like for you?
Just me and the dog. for anyone that knows where I live, I'm sure you've seen my dog, my golden retriever, Muggsy. He's out and about, and I apologize to anyone that he jumps on. But it's been very interesting. This morning, for example, we had to build in an extra 20 minutes because today was Grinch Day at school, and we had to have Cindy Lou Who hair.
Okay.
I do not have much hair. So, you know, learning about, you know, the order of shampoos and conditioners and dry shampoos and, you know, how to do hair and braid, I've come a long way. You know, I always thought that, you know, my plan was that we were going to go and have a boy. We were going to name him Campbell, and we were going to call him Cam. And I had it all figured out. And, you know, then we were blessed with two girls. And, you know, what's funny about it is, you know, with girls, the beauty of it is, for me, there's no expectation. You know, they don't need to walk in the same path. They don't need to share my same interests. It's just all fun.
How about when you have a little bit of free time and, you know, to be a father of a young family, sometimes that's fleeting. How do you like to spend your time, Taylor?
I love sports. I mean, anything sports related, going to games, watching games. You know, I'm still a sports junkie through and through. I can watch every single bowl game. It doesn't matter if it's the new era pinstripe bowl. I'm in, you know, Maction Tuesdays. You know, I love sports, any and all sports. The other thing, my family and I like to travel. Mm-hmm. We've gotten, you know, to go to some pretty cool places over the past couple of years. It's something that is fun for us to be able to share with our daughters. You know, we've taken them on a couple cruises thus far. We're going to Hawaii this upcoming year. So that's going to be, that's sort of a late 10-year anniversary trip that we're going to take. But we're doing it as a family, which will be a lot of fun.
Taylor, you've been involved in supporting your alma mater for some time now. What sparks that generosity?
Just trying to give back. You know, in a lot of ways, what Campbell's given me, you know, I told you before, I can't even imagine. It's funny when you think about, you know, the different forks in the road that you, you know, you think, you know, you could go one way or another. And, you know, you kind of make a choice without a whole lot of certainty. And Campbell is one of those choices for me. You know, it wasn't a path set in stone. It was something that, you know, I kind of grew into, and now it's so much a part of who I am today, the relationships that I have, who I've become. And so for me, you know, knowing how meaningful that is, you know, that's what's rewarding. I've always liked working with kids. I was a camp counselor, you know, in high school. A few of my buddies and I, we ran an indoor sports camp in Charlotte. And so my first couple summers, that's what I did going back home. And I've just always loved working with the youth. And, you know, a lot of these guys are grown men now, but they're still at that stage where they're transitioning, you know, from being in high school, figuring out how to grow up to gain their own life experiences, and then, you know, being able to go and take that to the next chapter of their lives. It's really just, it's very rewarding. And it gives, I mean, selfishly, it gives me a lot of juice too. I mean, I thrive off of the energy. There's something about this place that you can get. It's a little depressing around here, you know, with Christmas break.
Right.
And then, you know, you see everyone that when they show back up on campus, you know, there's just a breath of energy, you know, and I love seeing that. I love getting to feed off of that. We actually did a dinner this year going into the season for the rising seniors. We were at the library. Modern Woodman hosted it, and a handful of us got to go and interact with the rising seniors. We all spread out. We got to learn about, you know, their stories, their history. They asked us different questions, you know, what they were interested in, their career paths. And it was just, it was so cool, man, because there's just, you know, such a great group of guys, high character individuals. And for me, you know, that's something that I feed off of. Anything that I can go and share to help pay it forward is always great. But, you know, selfishly, it's something that helps continue to drive me.
Taylor, you're heavily involved in the Harnett County Historical Society Foundation. Share with us a little bit about that organization, its purpose, and why it's so important to you.
Yeah, so Harnett County Historical Society Foundation was created by my grandfather and a small group in the community with the task of preserving the home of J.A. Campbell, my great-great-grandfather. They restored the home. They turned it into a community gathering space. One of my brothers was married there. They used to routinely have wedding receptions. It used to be a place where you could host professional meetings, community groups, the garden club, other civic organizations. It was really there to serve the community and celebrate the history of the Campbell family and what that represents in Harnett County. For me in particular, it's very, very important because I want to be able to preserve that legacy. I also want to see the community be able to utilize that space again. One of the things with the foundation is that it was such a strong core group of people that came together to restore the home, to be able to get the land, to be able to move the property. There's three structures on the property. It's the J.A. Campbell House, which is on the National Historical Registry, home to three college university presidents, my great-great-grandfather, my great-grandfather, Leslie Campbell, and then his brother, Carlisle, who was also president of Meredith University. Mm-hmm. And then the cottage where J.A. was born, next door. That's the second structure. And then also the very first post office in Harnett County, Poe's Post Office, is also on that same piece of land. So it's very, very cool. I think that, you know, I think that to be able to go and have a piece of that history, Campbell and Harnett County are synonymous with each other. And for me, it's very important to be able to protect that legacy and get it back in its rightful shape. Currently, right now, for us, we are in the process of doing a lot of repair and restoration. We have gone and put new roofs on both the cottage and the Campbell House itself. We're getting new decks put in. Interiors got some work that is being done, and our expectation is that we're going to be able to start renting it out again and to be able to use it again for public community space, hopefully in March of 2026.
Taylor, is there a way that our listeners can help or become involved with the foundation?
Yeah, so one of the things that we will be doing, we will be doing some fundraising. We will be leaning on some people for volunteer work in months to come. Part of what we're doing in trying to get part of this whole restoration process, we've designated and reaffirmed our board. And we're also working to modernize some of the things that were not done previously. So we're getting a website set up, all of those things. The best way, if anyone would like to keep an eye on what's going on, if you have any questions, any interest in renting it, you can find us on social media right now is the best place. It is J.A. Campbell House. That is the same both on Instagram and on Facebook. And then as we start to get those other pieces and play with the website and the other components I mentioned, you know, we'll have those updated on there.
Taylor, your family's been involved with this place for upwards of 140 years. What kind of Campbell University and Buies Creek community would you like to see 10 or 15 years from now, one that your daughters might experience?
I think one of the things that with Campbell and Buies Creek, you know, kind of interchangeably, is the community aspect. Everything was built as a community. I have actually one of the things I brought here today I wanted to show you. I thought you'd get a kick out of this. This is a ledger from 1904 of tuition, and it shows, you know, $1.25 here and there. But it's all broken down by names and pages. There's some purchase orders for sacks of flour and meal and, you know, from the early days of supplies that they needed to be able to make Campbell what it is. Everyone came together as a community, and that's always what I saw. It was one of the things that made this place so unique. There's no reason for Buies Creek to be a spot where a university like Campbell should be located. I mean, there's really not. What makes it unique are the people and the experience. And that's really what I would like to see. I'd like to see people that stay here. I'd like to see people that go and raise their families here, that build a legacy here. That's what I think that is the core component to Buies Creek. Everyone that I saw growing up, you could go and you would see them on campus. You would go to church and there would be Dr. Wallace, right? Or you would see Pearl and Fred McCall. You would see all the community members that were all engaged and all part of each other's lives. And, you know, I think that that's something that you just don't get much these days. I'm in mortgage business, so the average time that people stay in their home is 5 to 7 years before they resell. People aren't paying off their 30-year fixed mortgage, right, and staying where they are. But I think that Harnett County has a lot to offer, being so close to Wake, in between Wake and Cumberland County. I think that if people will stay and invest in this community, then that's what I look forward to seeing Campbell and Buies Creek in years to come.
And finally, Taylor, can you put into words what Campbell University and Buies Creek mean to you?
You know, I think that for me personally, I think kind of what embodies this place is that, you know, Buies Creek and Campbell is kind of an incubator for growth. There are people, the core people that have built this, that have made it what this area is. But for everyone else that comes through as a student, you know, you come from wherever in the world, from whatever walk of life, and this place transforms you. It becomes a part of you. You carry a piece of it with you wherever you go. People will remember you and welcome you back. For me, I've had about 3 different chapters of my life where coming here just provided a place where I could put my head down and focus and work, also a place of refuge to be able to get away, you know, to have some peace. I think it's a special place. I think people that have been here and been a part of that know exactly what I'm talking about. And for those of you that haven't, you got to come check it out.
I'm Stan Cole, and our guest today on Tales from the Creek has been Taylor Reed. Thank you, Taylor, for sharing your Tales from the Creek.
Thank you, Stan.